Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, immigrant communities are fearful as federal immigration raids increase. As the raids escalate under the Trump administration, immigrant communities, especially those in rural areas, are facing heightened fear and uncertainty. Rural and migrant ministry is on the front lines, and we'll learn about the impact these raids are having on immigrant communities in rural New York and the steps the organization's taking to respond to the crisis. Wayne County Prison is the latest facility to join the National Sheriff's Association's National Ignite Initiative, a program designed to provide incarcerated individuals with the support they need to successfully re-enter society. We'll learn more. And the C word, it's a difficult subject that's often whispered in hushed tones, cancer. We'll speak more about that after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Officials say there are likely no survivors after an American Airlines passenger jet collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter on a training mission near Reagan National Airport outside of Washington, D.C. last night as the plane was about to land. Both aircraft plunged into the Potomac River. Both have been found. The plane was found upside down and in three parts. 64 people were on the plane. Three soldiers were on the helicopter. 28 bodies so far have been recovered. Jackson Sinneberg from member station WAMU has more.
Crews from D.C. Fire and EMS, the Coast Guard, Maryland State Police, and more waded into the Potomac's 8-foot-deep, frigid waters throughout the night. Their initial mission to search for and rescue potential survivors became one of recovering bodies and wreckage. Officials say the plane broke into three sections. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia recalled their arrival to the scene.
And while I did not see the collision, I'd never seen this many red lights streaming towards the airport and across the river in Maryland about this time. My phone started blowing up, and I realized that this accident had taken place.
The American Airlines passenger jet was en route from Wichita, Kansas, heading to D.C. Among the passengers were members of the U.S. figure skating community who were attending a skating camp. For NPR News, I'm Jackson Sinnenberg.
Three of President Trump's key cabinet nominees will be on Capitol Hill for Senate confirmation hearings, including Kash Patel, Trump's nominee to head the FBI. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Charles Grassley.
Mr. Patel, I know you know this, but it's your job to restore the public trust and return the FBI to its core mission of fighting crime.
It's an agency Patel has been critical of in the past, telling a podcast that if he was in charge, he would close the FBI headquarters and turn it into a museum to the deep state. Health and Human Services nominee Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be back for a second day, and Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence nominee, will also be on the Hill today. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reports somewhat slower economic growth in the final months of the year. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
The U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 2.3% in October, November, and December, a modest slowdown from the previous quarter. The growth was largely fueled by robust consumer spending on both goods and services. Business investment was down during the quarter. Economic growth in Europe has been much weaker. The European Central Bank lowered its benchmark interest rate today in an effort to jumpstart economic activity. Here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve is holding interest rates steady. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said Wednesday the central bank is in no hurry to cut interest rates further until it sees more progress on inflation or else signs of weakness in the job market. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. It was days ago that Chinese startup DeepSeek shocked the tech industry with its artificial intelligence model developed far cheaper than those produced by companies such as OpenAI. Now, as NPR's John Ruwitch reports, a second company in China says it's done much the same.
The Chinese tech giant Alibaba says it's launched an upgrade to its AI model, and the new version performs better than cutting-edge AIs, including OpenAI's ChatGPT-4 and Meta's Llama. The news comes on the heels of a stock market meltdown after DeepSeek unveiled an advanced AI model that it claims was made cheaply and with fewer and lower performance microchips than others. Many in the industry were surprised by DeepSeek, believing that companies in China were further behind the leading American AI firms. Alibaba's cloud computing unit says its new model comprehensively outperformed DeepSeek's V3 large language model and the others. NPR has not verified the claim. John Ruwitch, NPR News.
A mountain in New Zealand has been recognized as a legal person with all the rights and responsibilities of a human being. Mount Taranaki, now known as Taranaki Maunga, is considered an ancestor of the Maori indigenous people. The legal recognition acknowledges the mountain's theft from the Maori people after New Zealand was colonized. The pristine snow-capped dormant volcano is the second highest on New Zealand's North Island, and it's a popular spot for tourists, hiking, and also snow sports. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Amazon Business, committed to being a digital purchasing solution for businesses so that growing the business is the main focus and not admin and paperwork. Learn about smart business buying at AmazonBusiness.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Trump administration has ramped up arrests of undocumented migrants in major cities around the country, detaining thousands of people, including criminals and those without criminal histories alike. Since the president took office 10 days ago, there have been raids in cities including Chicago, Denver, Los Angeles, and New York. Reports of ICE agents in tactical gear making arrests have quickly spread, raising concerns about deportations among the immigrant community. In some communities, the arrests have prompted some migrants to skip work and keep their children home from school. Rural and Migrant Ministry, an organization advocating for farm workers and rural workers in New York, has been on the front lines. For over 40 years, Rural and Migrant Ministry has worked with churches, unions, and community groups to fight for fair labor conditions. Joining us now is Reverend Richard Witt, Executive Director of Rural and Migrant Ministry, to share what he's hearing on the ground from his community and how his organization is responding to these enforcement actions. Reverend Witt, thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How has this increase in federal immigration raids under the Trump administration affected the immigrant communities you've served?
I'm not clear at the moment whether there have been increased raids in our communities, but I am well aware of the terror that is being felt by people across our counties because of the promotion of these actions and the fear of, you know, upcoming actions. And people are really succumbing to these fears and not terrified to go to work, terrified to go grocery shopping. As you mentioned, you know, afraid to have their children go to school. In turn, the children are fearful that their parents are going to be taken from them. It's having a major impact on people's mental well-being. And in turn, and I think many of us don't realize this, it's going to have a major impact on our local economies.
Let's remind people about the local aspect of this. You mentioned the counties that you serve. Let's remind folks where you guys work and the people that you're hearing from. It's here in Sullivan. It's throughout the Catskills.
Right. We have a center in South Fallsburg, and we also have a center in Orange County in Cornwall. And then we also work with folks out in the Finger Lakes and the eastern end of Long Island. So we really have a foot in rural New York across the state. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and as I mentioned in the introduction, you worked with a lot of those folks who are farm workers, rural workers, and been on the front lines here. So what are you hearing from these folks, the biggest fears and concerns that you're working with right now?
People are afraid that they are going to be deported, or someone they love is going to be deported, or be detained. And, you know, we can get into that in a moment because some have expressed the thought that maybe we're not talking about mass deportation, we're talking about mass detainment. And boy, that has a lot of economic implications.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those economic implications. What would that be, affect the local economy? How would that affect the local economy?
Right. So just before saying that, I think what's going on right now for many of us is that we can fall into a trap of talking about them. You know, those people, they are doing this or they deserve that, what have you. And we don't talk about the we. And the we is all of us and how we're all impacted by this. We saw this a few years ago when there was a raid of a food processing plant in Liberty, and 220 folk were detained. And a lot of folk outside of that immigrant community didn't think it was that big of a deal until people started realizing, 220 people are not paying rent. 220 people are not coming down to the local hardware store. And people began to realize the economic connections that everybody had. So take the dairy industry for a moment. If you start raiding and arresting folks that are working in the dairy farms, then we're not going to have milk. And if we're not going to have milk, we're not going to have Chobani yogurt. And, you know, cottage cheese, and the prices are going to go up because already the farms are having trouble finding workers to begin with. And so that's what I mean by, you know, we're all connected and it's going to impact all of us.
And you mentioned a company like Chobani Yogurt, which has a big operation here in New York and relies on a lot of workers that could be impacted here.
And also relies on the milk.
And the milk, right, exactly.
From the dairy farms, right?
So. Exactly. The whole chain. What can Rural and Migrant Ministry do, and how have you been responding to this heightened fear in the community?
Well, first and foremost, we're working hard to affirm our brothers and sisters that are here in our communities and working so hard. You know, men, women, children, they are wonderful human beings and feeling very judged right now by outsiders and others. So we work hard to affirm the humanity and to hold up the stories of these hardworking families and their contributions. In turn, then, we're being forced into doing a lot of knowing your rights. And it's not just helping people know their rights, but it's also helping those who are allies to immigrant families understand what the law is and how they can support and stand with folks. And we will be doing a training at our center coming up for those who want to know more about how they can stand with immigrants. And then the third realm is we're beginning a campaign to help New Yorkers understand what we were just talking about, the economic implications and its impact on our rural communities, so that we can bring together farmers and church folk and Chamber of Commerce folk to help give voice to this is destroying our communities.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Reverend Richard Witt, the Executive Director of Rural and Migrant Ministry, sharing what he's hearing on the ground in the immigrant communities and about how the organization is responding to enforcement actions that are going around the country and creating fear, really, as we've discussed. And as you said, you're not aware of anything that's necessarily been happening locally. It seems as if there have been very high-profile raids in these cities, including New York City on Tuesday, which oddly only yielded about 20 arrests, despite the scale of the operation. Do you think that some of this is meant to incite this fear among the immigrant community?
I do believe that there's an intentional effort to incite the fear within our communities. I also am concerned that these statements and these efforts by Washington will give people in our communities an understanding that they too can participate in discrimination and carry out their prejudice. So I think we all have to work hard to have conversation within our own communities, within our police departments and our sheriffs, our school systems, about not succumbing to this prejudice, this unjust oppression.
You mentioned having a more coordinated response with some of those organizations. Have you already started? Well, you always work with these organizations like local governments, churches, and other community groups, but have you been talking to them already about how to formulate a response? And what are those folks saying to you?
Yes, we have been in conversations. We'll continue to be in conversations. We'll continue to reach out to be in conversations. And one of the things that we're urging folks to do is to speak up, to show their appreciation of our brothers and sisters, to post signs in front of their businesses and their congregations, so that we don't give in to the voices of hatred, and we don't give in to the voices of fear, that folks can see there are other voices in our communities that are calling. You know, when I first started at Rural Migrant Ministry back in the 90s, most of the farm workers in New York were migrating back and forth from Mexico to the United States. They were here, they were working, and then they were going back home. There wasn't, and there was no wall. There wasn't all this anger and fear and mistrust during that period. And I think in turn, people had more energy to live in the midst of a peaceful coexistence. This anger and hatred is tearing apart our communities. And it takes a lot of energy.
It does.
Angry.
Yeah, it does. It does. It takes a lot of energy out of folks who want to support as well and see this anger just permeating society. You mentioned, you know, businesses supporting farm workers and the community by, you know, putting a sign up. How can the broader public show solidarity with rural and migrant workers during this difficult time?
I think the broader public can work to engage in conversation with their school officials, with their town officials, from a starting point about how can we make this work? How can we join together to create a more peaceful environment that also doesn't destroy our economy?
I'm sure there are folks that are listening who would want to reach out and show their support. How could they reach out to Rural Migrant Ministry? And are there any upcoming efforts that you have that you're trying to engage the broader community for these efforts?
They can visit our website, which is ruralmigrantministry.org. And that will have information that folks need. We are also in the process of publishing. We published it once before, in 2017, we're republishing an updated version of what we call a menu of hope. And a menu of hope offers a toolkit for folks about things they can do to be supportive of immigrant brothers and sisters, and also, information that they can pass along to folks that they may know that are needing to know their rights or needing to better understand what the law is, and reduce the fever. I mean, from what I understand, they have recently had a lot of conversations within one of our local school districts about what people can wear at graduation in relationship to their cultural heritage. That's a conversation that needs, and I heard a lot about that actually from the young people involved in our program. So let's have more conversation about how to honor people rather than how to divide people. And let's have more peaceful conversation rather than heated school board meetings and town meetings where we allow the loudest voices to take control.
Was this just about, just to pick up on that a little bit more, was this about what students could or couldn't wear to show and honor their heritage?
Right. At graduation, in recent years at graduations all across the country, folks would wear, scarves, stoles, or pins, what have you, on their graduation regalia that would hold up their cultural heritage. And somehow we've gotten really upset about some of our recent arrivals in terms of their cultural heritage, but we have such great pride around some of the cultural heritage of countries from, 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm. As someone who's been on the front lines of your efforts here, what keeps you motivated and hopeful, especially in such a challenging political climate?
I get to hang around with really remarkable people. And, the people that I get to meet, the diverse array of people I get to meet, have energy and have hope and have passion about their country, about their communities, about their schools. And when you hang around with people like that, as my grandmother used to say, if you want to be holy, hang around with holy people. You want to be hopeful, hang around with hopeful people. If you want to be just, hang around with just people. So that's one of the great things at Rural Mega Mysteries. We get to hang around with remarkable, loving people. And it's very energizing, and it's very peaceful.
Your grandmother was right. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. We've been talking to Reverend Richard Witt, the Executive Director of Rural and Migrant Ministry. You can find out more about their great work at ruralmigrantministry.org. Reverend Witt, thank you again, and we appreciate all the efforts that you're doing with all of the remarkable people in the community.
Thank you. It was a blessing to be with you. Be well.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about the National Ignite Initiative in Wayne County. It's to help post-incarcerated folks get the support they need to successfully reenter society. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3, on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Prison is the latest facility to join the National Sheriff's Association's National Ignite Initiative. It's a program designed to provide incarcerated individuals with the education, job skills, and post-incarceration support they need to successfully reenter society. Jen Geyer is the Director of Inmate Services for the Wayne County Prison, and she's here to tell us more about their new involvement in the Ignite program. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Ignite program and what it aims to accomplish?
Sure. So we basically would like to educate the inmates better so that when they're released back into the same county, they have a little bit more of a chance of finding a job, maybe changing their lives a little bit, and growing from while being incarcerated.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you what motivated Wayne County Prison to become part of this initiative, and how do you think it aligns with your department's mission?
Well, my deputy warden, John Masco, and our administrative assistant, Gwen Martin, they went to, I guess, like a jail expo, and one of the sheriffs there was talking so positively about this that they came back and they, you know, addressed it with me, and they were like, this is the program for this jail. You know, we have to get excited about, you know, having more programs here, having things done for these prisoners. Like, I'm already very fortunate. I have so many volunteers that come here already and, you know, teach these inmates, you know, basic skills and art programs so they can better themselves outside. But along with the Sheriff's Association, you know, we get a little bit more of a push. We got some laptops for them now with a really good program from called Edovo. And they basically get way more education, learning applications. So there's over like 2,000 different things that they can earn certificates on.
And I'm just letting the listener know there's a little static on your line, so it's not.
Oh, no worries. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's not your radio, though, listener. So we can still hear you well, though. And the Ignite program emphasizes comprehensive education and post-incarceration work opportunities. Do these components already fit into your current inmate services programs, or how do they fit in?
Oh, yes. We have a fantastic program through the Settlers Inn. They will interview eligible inmates that are here, provide them with jobs and housing, which is fantastic.
How do you think this program will help reduce recidivism rates and improve that reintegration into society once an inmate is released?
Listen, for me, I would love to see nobody come back here. Unfortunately, it's the same people. So if we can just at least get one out of every 10 to maybe get it and maybe find out that there is a better way, you don't have to keep coming back here, my job is done.
Yeah. You kind of want to be out of a job in some ways.
Basically, yeah.
What kind of support will inmates receive after they complete the educational and those certification components of the program? And do you have partnerships in the community to help them secure jobs once they're released?
Well, the Settlers Inn is the one that I work with currently. Basically, the reason why I'm speaking with you and that we're in the newspaper is I'm asking for more.
Uh-huh.
I would love for more people to get involved. You know, like if any mechanic shops around would like to come in and teach a little class, they can learn how to change some oil, something like that, like that they can get a job. Like right now, I just have the Settlers Inn, but I would love to have more local entities come here and help us out.
Well, talk to some businesses that might be listening or folks that could offer opportunities. What would it take for them to be part of this program to help out?
Honestly, all you have to do is give me a call at 570-253-2621, extension 1540. If you can pass a background check and you have anything that you think would be sufficient for these inmates to learn that they could have a job afterwards, come on down.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like it's a program that a lot of people could benefit from on both sides here. You know, what is that process for you guys to go through this Ignite program to become an official site? As I mentioned, it's part of the National Sheriff's Association. Were there certain benchmarks that you had to meet in order to implement the program?
No, they were just actually so super supportive in helping us launch it. They just wanted to make sure that we had volunteers here, that we were asking more volunteers to come here, and that we were going to be part of this Edovo program with the laptops, which we have already started.
You're working directly with the inmates, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And have you been seeing a positive impact day to day on lives of some of these individuals who are participating in this program?
Yes. My volunteers come here on a weekly basis, and their eyes light up just to get out of their unit, be able to do something. I have this wonderful lady who does felting. Her name is Ellen Silberlight, and she's looking to do something for after incarceration, which is fantastic because the guys and the girls that are here, they love this our program. And if they had the chance to do that outside of the jail, you know, when they leave here, I think that would be phenomenal.
Do you hope that folks participating in this program has a broader impact on the local community? Do you think it'll change the way maybe the public views incarcerated individuals and their potential for success after their release?
Well, like, look, every single person is human. We're one cocktail too many, one little anger mistake getting, you know, we're human. Everybody's just one mistake away from being in here. It's not like, you know, it's so easy to get arrested. It's so easy to, you know, become a part of the system, to come to jail for just a little mistake. So everybody who's in here is, they're just normal people that just got caught up in a mistake, basically. So if you don't want to see them keep coming back here, you know, they need jobs, they need opportunities. A lot of them are the product of their environment and how they grew up. So, you know, like, they don't know any better. So I'm trying to show them that there is better. And I have, you know, like, I hope the community can help me out with that.
Well, I mean, Jen, just hearing you talk about it and your passion for helping individuals in this situation, I think it's coming through. There may be some stigma attached to people who are in jail, but as you said, we're all human and it can happen to anybody. And it sounds like you care a lot about your role there.
Yeah, I love my job. I really do. I enjoy the inmates. I have great staff that I work under. I have a great administration. So everybody works together here to make sure that these individuals are very well taken care of and that they're educated. So by the time that they do get out of here, maybe they have a little hope and they could do something better.
Yeah. Are there plans to expand or enhance the program as it evolves? Or is there, what's the future of the Ignite program there?
Well, it just started, so it's baby steps for us right now. So we just got these laptops in place, and if you meet the requirements, you know, you can't have any incidences. You have to be a very well-behaved inmate. You get to be a part of that program, and then hopefully it's going to launch the other inmates to see, wow, if I behave and I do a good job, I can be a part of this program also.
What are, you mentioned Settlers Inn is the one organization locally that you're working with there in Hawley. What kinds of program? What kinds of jobs are folks doing there?
Culinary. I don't want to say inmates' names, but I do have one that literally, you know, left here, went to go to work at the Settlers Inn program. He got housing through them, and now he's going through to chef school through them. Damn. So he started off as a dishwasher, and now, you know, they're training him to become a cook. And, like, that is my dream. Wow. Like, I love to see that someone left here on the worst terms and basically is really making it right now.
Great. Is there anything else you want to share about that program for folks? And again, to remind folks in, that might have opportunities that to participate in the local community to help out folks.
If you have a gift or you have a talent or you have something in mind that you want to teach these guys, give me a call and I'll be extremely happy to set that up.
Jen Geyer is the Director of Inmate Services for the Wayne County Prison there in Pennsylvania. Jen, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the work that you're doing to help give folks a second chance.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the C word. This is Radio Chatsko.
Hi there, I'm Angela Page. I do a show called Folk Plus, 2 o'clock on Sundays. And if you want to hear clever lyrics, memorable melodies, all wound around one theme, check out my show Folk Plus. You can listen to last week's show at the Folk Plus page on WJFF's website or catch it in real time, 2 o'clock on Sundays.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, experience the transformative possibilities of poetry with United States Poet Laureate Ada Limón. She's the author of 6 collections and one of Time Magazine's 12 Women of the Year for 2024. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance kicks off its 2025 Salon Series this weekend with an intimate event that seeks to tackle a subject that's often whispered about in hushed tones, cancer. At the event, aptly titled The C Word, three local women will share their individual cancer journeys and share insights on how we can better communicate about this illness and support those living with it. Two of them are joining us now, Ramona Jan and Teresa Telepano. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ramona, first to you. How has this journey been for you and help you communicate your experience in this event? Why did you want to come forward and talk about this event at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance Salon Series?
Well, it was actually inspired by something that Teresa wrote during a Yarn Slingers event. And I thought she really concisely said everything that I was experiencing and other people that I know with cancer were experiencing and was truly in my heart. And as I am very much a spontaneous person, I just came up to her and said, hey, I have an idea. And, of course, there was no plan. And so afterwards, she of course, agreed and said, yeah, let's do it. And then pretty soon we started putting the plans together with Ariel. So it was off of a piece that she wrote for Yarn Slingers, which she's going to read, by the way, at this event.
Yeah, Teresa, tell us a little bit about that story and how you see the power of storytelling in addressing something that some folks see as sensitive, cancer.
Well, I think storytelling has the unique ability to engender empathy for each other. And it's, you know, it's pretty ancient. And it's a way to communicate out and also to understand how someone else is doing. So I wrote my piece in a response to frustration I was feeling around the way people cannot communicate easily about cancer and the missteps people make, often well-intentioned, but still it occurs to me that people really mean well, but they make the wrong move. For example, you might be having a great day and someone will come up to you and say, oh, what stage of cancer are you at now? And it's out of the blue. You can't control it, but you know, your day is marred by that. Sometimes you don't want to dwell in that experience. You're dwelling in it all the time. So that's an example of something that happened that triggered this story I wrote. But once I started, I guess, kvetching about, you know, this experience, a lot of things came out that had happened over the years of my own experience with cancer. So,
and if I can add to that,
yeah,
something to
yeah,
that,
please. Yes.
Basically, without giving too much away, because we don't want to have this conversation now here on the radio, what we're trying to do is in real time bring together the community to try to solve this problem so that nobody feels awkward.
And that's a great way to put it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but let's talk about that awkwardness or the taboo nature of it. Some people avoid discussing it altogether. Why do you think that is? Ramona, first to you.
Well, that's what we're going to try to work out, because everybody is touched by cancer in some way or another, if not directly, then indirectly. And I don't think it is a discussion that is had, because oftentimes where we are being treated, they'll have groups that are just for the cancer people and their families, but not for the community that's helping and supporting them and concerned about them. So this is a new experiment, I believe, and I hope people will come. I hope some oncologists will show up. I've invited mine.
Teresa, what's your personal experience taught you about breaking down those barriers about the taboo nature of talking about cancer?
Well, I believe it's people's own fear of mortality and also their own pain that they're trying to avoid. I mean, I've literally had the experience of friends disappearing when they found out I had cancer, completely just abandoning is the word I would use, or it's how it felt to me. And I have come to terms with the idea that they just couldn't handle their own fears about their own mortality or others that they care about. But it is the impact on someone who has cancer, if someone can't talk about it with them in an open, kind of frank way, or just leaves when that happens, it's pretty painful. And you kind of don't want to add pain to someone who's already going through sometimes pretty terrible treatment.
Yeah. Can you talk about the importance of then community and people who are supporting you in your journey, especially in terms of finding those that can help lift you up during these times?
Absolutely. I look to Yarn Slingers. Ramona mentioned it. She was the founder 15 years ago almost of this storytelling group here in the Catskills. And I have found so much of my community through becoming a part of that storytelling group. So I can say that I've made really close friends with people who are either a fellow Yarn Slingers or audience members even. And these are people who are receptive, I believe, because they're there to hear the storytelling. And so they are a little more open maybe to receiving the message from the stories.
And Yarn Slingers, we've talked about Yarn Slingers with you, Ramona, throughout the years. But for folks who don't know about Yarn Slingers, it's a local group dedicated to the art of storytelling and founded by you. Humor is often part of your storytelling. How does using humor in the face of something like cancer help you and others cope with difficult conversations?
Well, I'll first also say that all of the stories are memoir, so they're not. A lot of times when people say storytelling, you know, that could include anything, but ours is particularly memoir. And as far as myself with humor, I'm a columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, and I am actually a humorist. I often tell people I'm not a reporter like Dorothy Kilgallen, because you can get murdered doing that. I'm more like the fictitious character in Sex and the City, Carrie, what was her last name? Fisher, I think.
Bradshaw,
right.
Bradshaw.
Oh, Carrie Fisher is an actress. Okay, Carrie Bradshaw, right. You know, so, you know, memoir, you know, it is good to see the sunny side of things, I guess you could say, or the humor in, you know, the funny parts of things, and that's what I'll often write about. I kind of think more like a bittersweet. There's some humor, but then there's, I'll be reading something also. I don't want to talk too much about that and give it all away. It's sort of like sending out a postcard for an art exhibit. You have your best piece on there. Huh, why go to the art exhibit then?
But in your column for the Democrat, Ramona's Ramblings, you've shared your journey, and have you gotten feedback from readers?
Yes, I do. I actually get feedback. Of course, I don't know everyone, and I don't know how many people the paper goes out to, but I think it's, you know, in the thousands. And I get feedback from nurses, oncology nurses, and you'd be surprised who will write to me. They can't believe things happened a certain way in the medical field. You know, so, yes, I get feedback from a lot of different people and a lot of encouragement, and I got a lot of handwritten cards, which I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. They send them to the paper and the paper gets them over to me, and I still have every single one of them.
Teresa, you've taught diverse groups. You teach and have taught pop culture inspired writing classes. What does it mean to you to be a part of an event where three women are offering their different cancer journeys, coming together to share their cancer journeys at the C Word? I should mention the third person is Marla Pusetti, who is the co-owner with her husband Paul of the Heron Restaurant there in Narrowsburg, will be at the event as well.
Well, I want to note that you mentioned that it's three women, and I want to say we are all adult women, and we have some wisdom to offer. We've lived a bit, and I think that gets erased a lot in our society. the wisdom of women and the wisdom of older women in particular. So I feel that it's important for our voices to be heard, along with, you know, the subject matter is difficult. And I want to go back to just what you were talking to Ramona about a moment ago. Humor is important, but often it's a dark humor. It's not necessarily lightning. I just want to put that out there. Myself, I did improv for 12 years, and I always say the funniest stuff is dark, dark, funny, dark. Yeah. So I tend to write in that vein myself. And I think that the importance is that we just get the dialogue started, that people start thinking and talking about how does it land? Because I think that is the most important thing. Impact is always greater than intention. The people, like I said earlier, have good intentions often, but the impact can be kind of harmful. So it's like really consider what you're about to say to someone who is already going through a lot.
So I want to add to that. I feel like what we're going to be doing is really like we're going to create a laboratory on Saturday. It's going to be a laboratory of real-time solving of this problem, experimenting. And we may not solve the problem, but we can at least create a laboratory.
They mentioned on the DVA website, DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org, that, you know, this is a select, quote, club that no one wants to be a part of. And so you guys are taking this with the humor and candidness, as we've been talking about it, to navigate these conversations. What do you hope the audience will learn about navigating the conversations? Especially, you know, in this context that you said, like this, I guess, did you call it like a lab experiment there, Ramona?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you hope folks take away from this?
That we get back to a sense of normalcy, that still has a component of, care to it.
Teresa?
I'd say, you know, I jump onto what Ramona just said and add, you know, try to imagine that we're all doing the best that we can at all times. And sometimes you have kind of a monumental thing weighing on you that doesn't allow you to be your best self. And that could really be anything. But in this case, we're talking about how cancer impacts us. So try to consider that for others. And, again, I think what I said earlier, impact is greater than intent. Really, I want people to take that away from this conversation.
Yeah.
And if for nothing else, just hearing, Teresa's piece, is worth the visit. And we're all just going to read something short, about 5 minutes each before we start the interaction question and answer portion of the event, and sort of the get the test tubes out and start pouring one into the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if for nothing else, to come in here the three written pieces, it would be worth it.
And we've touched on this a couple of times during this conversation, and again, it is. Some people may be reluctant to talk about cancer or illness with loved ones. Is there any piece of advice you would have on starting those conversations in a compassionate and meaningful way for folks?
Well, that's what we want to talk about at our event, and actually not here on the radio.
You're not giving it away.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the event. So rather than give anything, you know, to, like I said, put the best painting on the postcard, we prefer to, you know, because without the community there, we can just talk one-sided. But we need to hear from the community and their experience as well.
Okay.
It's not just about us.
Right. The Salon Series is Saturday, February 1st at 2 at Krauss Recital Hall in Narrowsburg. Anything else you guys are working on that you want folks to know about after this event, Teresa or Ramona?
Yes. I actually am teaching a class at One Grand Books on February 16th. It is a generative writing class for writers of all levels and in any genre. It's a way to jumpstart you if you're stuck in something that you're currently writing or if you need inspiration to create new work. And it's from 3 to 5 p.m. If anybody is interested in taking that class, you can email rsvp@onegrandbooks.com for registration.
And when is that again?
That's February 16th. It's a Sunday, I'm pretty sure. Sorry, from 3 to 5 p.m.
And
is that going to be at One Grand Books?
Yes, it is.
In Narrowsburg?
Yes.
Yeah, Grand Books right there on Main Street, and February 16th is a Sunday. Ramona, do you have another Yarn Slingers event coming up? I think you guys just had one, what was it, last night? Oh, no, not last. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
Well, we have a week ago.
I'm looking at the wrong date, wrong calendar.
Right. We have a website now that has a calendar, and it's at yarnslingers.com. And, yes, there will be another one at Seminary Hill Cidery in February. I don't know the exact date, but
I think it's February 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, and that would be at noon. But you should check the yarnslingers.com website to be certain.
Yeah.
Right. Anything else you want folks to know about the C word before we go?
Not me, because I want people to come.
Ramona's keeping it close to the vest. Teresa.
Nothing else.
I would just like to say, you know, it was very kind of Ramona to say to come to hear my piece, but her piece is stunning. And I feel really grateful to get to do an event that's just us girls, because it's special. Ramona is really an inspiration for me, and I appreciate her so much. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to make a good team. And of course, Marla, too, is a tour de force, especially in the Narrowsburg area. So
right.
It's going to be a great event.
Well, and those who know Marla from The Heron know she is a force of nature and a fighter. And it'll be great to hear her as well. Again, the DVAA is opening its 2025 Salon Series with the afternoon of story sharing conversation about cancer. It's called The C Word. It's Saturday from 2 to 4 at Krause Recital Hall in Narrowsburg. There's more information at Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. org. We've been speaking with Ramona Jan and Teresa Tolopano, two of the folks who are participating in that event. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bye-bye. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can hear this show and all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. You can also tune in tonight for the local edition at 6, followed by the daily at 6:30. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Microbiologist Ann Madden says when you touch your face, you are touching much more than just your skin.
We are an ecosystem, and so you're actually feeling over 100 billion bacterial cells on your face.
From microbes to language to kindergartners, ideas about the small but mighty. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill. Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, SullivanCatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, CatskillBrewery.com, and listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, sunshine and clouds mixed, a high of 26. Tonight, it looks like there is a winter weather advisory in effect overnight until 9 a.m. Friday. Freezing rain is expected. total ice accumulations around a light glaze and localized amounts up to a tenth of an inch of ice could be possible, especially in higher elevations of northeast Pennsylvania and parts of Sullivan County. That's from 2 to 9 a.m. Friday. Very slippery roads, bridges, sidewalks possible, and the hazardous conditions could impact the Friday morning commute tomorrow. Slow down, use caution when traveling, and prepare for possible power outages as well. Some icing possible again, low 19 tonight. Tomorrow, freezing rain in the morning and then changing to rain. That is going to be our forecast for tomorrow. And then as we look ahead to the weekend for having a problem getting it up on the computer, but it will be here shortly. Looking ahead to the weekend, it looks like we'll see some colder, breezy conditions. Saturday, 24, the high, a low of 6. Sunday, a bit of afternoon snow, and a high of 28.
This week on This American Life.
So he's moving now. The guy in the white car's moving. Bob's moving. You'll all be able to put your cars right down there.
On a narrow street in Brooklyn, one neighbor takes it on himself to get everybody to move their cars two times a week when the street cleaner comes through. He does this week in, week out. We hear about that and about other people who choose to live in their own, ever-repeating Groundhog Days. For Groundhog Day, this week.
Saturday at 6 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, juggling some breaking news this morning. President Trump is scheduled to speak at approximately 11 o'clock in a few minutes regarding the helicopter and airplane crash that took place last night over the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. We'll go to NPR News live for the president's remarks when they happen. Again, that's scheduled at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This week on Latino USA, we take a deep dive into the first hours of Donald Trump's return to the White House and how our community is reacting. We also talk to Peruvian American author Marie Arana on her latest work, Latino Land, a book that helps us understand the past, present, and future of Latinos in this country. That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians, the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music.
Your eyes are set on stars. I love to see you shine because you really blow my mind.
Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
Your heart beats like a drum.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cook breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill
local news, culture, and NPR.